for a segment we call Underground History. Chelsea Rose of Sula brings in people and stories about archaeology and the intricate and fascinating process of truly unearthing the past. This month, no digging required. All the artifacts that help tell the story are above ground. We think they are, anyway, because we'll talk about a painter and his works. William S. Parrott was a landscape painter of some note in the second half of the 19th century. Peter Bogue, professor and Columbia chair in history at Washington State University, is working on a book about Parrott. Welcome, Dr. Bogue.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Good to have you. Chelsea Rose Masula, of course, is back to talk about our subject and his time in Southern Oregon. Chelsea, always good to have you.
Great to be here.
So, Dr. Bogue, tell us about what makes William S. Parrott such a draw for you and what got you into researching his life.
Well, I've long been interested in the Cascade Mountains, and Parrott became well-known in the late 19th century for his renditions, his oil paintings of the major peaks of the Cascades. And some years ago, I was in a gallery, and I came upon his paintings and fell in love with him. I love late 19th century art, especially realist paintings of the American West as a historian of the American West. And so in time, as I collected a couple paintings, I started doing a little bit of research on the various painters and just became fascinated with William Parrott.
Now, I understand, was very young when he arrived in Oregon. What do we know about his birth family and their origins?
Yeah, so his family, he was born in 1844 in Missouri, and his parents and he and a couple other siblings, there were eight children in all in the family, migrated on the Oberlin Trails in 1847. It was one of the largest early migration years to the West Coast. So he came from Missouri, and they settled in the Willamette Valley in Polk County, and then later moved on to the Klickitat Valley here in Washington. And his family were members of the founders of the city of Goldendale in Klickitat County. That's north of the Dalles.
Where he ended his life, I mean, he died in Goldendale, didn't he?
Yes, late in his life, he was ill. He had a heart condition, and he and his sister, the next one in line, born after him. They were very close, and he returned to her home, Jane Golden, in Goldendale, and that's where he died. And he's buried. His grave is there in Goldendale.
I used the verb incorrectly. He did not end his own life. I want to be clear on that. No. Now, interesting thing, much earlier in life, I mean, as his artistic talent was developing, it looked like William S. Parrott also had a talent for making do with what he had on hand to be able to paint. Tell us about his ingenuity there.
Yeah, that's true. Growing up in Western Oregon in a farming family, he didn't have many resources. He was a self-taught artist. He actually used hair from his sister Jane's combing brush. He took the hairs and made paintbrushes with those. And he also used charcoal and flowers to kind of distill different colors that he used as he began his painting. Later, of course, he turned to oil painting.
I read that he used his sister's hair, and I pictured him yanking it out of her head.
Yeah, I know.
But I've heard from other artist friends of mine that baby hair is the finest. It's like the premium for really fine paintwork. So, maybe there was that's a wider trend than we realize, I guess, maybe?
Well, human hair was often commonly used in paintbrushes in those days. We have a lot of synthetics these days. And also, they used animal hair as well, tails of different types of animals.
Yeah, Chelsea, I'm afraid I went the same place you did, thinking he just walked up to Jane and went, bink! Nothing like that. Nobody is suggesting, by the way, do take it from a brush. If you need baby hair for a paintbrush, do not go pull it out of some baby's head. That's a stern warning here from the Jefferson Exchange. So, Peter, did William S. Parrott receive formal training at any point in his life?
Well, actually, I don't believe so. Later in his life, he ended up in Oakland, and he opened a studio there, and a local newspaper wrote much about him. And the materials were largely fabricated, I think, for self-promotion. He did say in this article that he received training in Missouri. There actually is no evidence. So it seems that he was completely self-taught. However, he did live in a community of artists in Salem and also in Portland. He actually lived with some artists. They had studios, and so no doubt they swapped techniques and talked about art, and so they assisted each other. But as far as formal training otherwise, there doesn't seem to be any evidence for that.
Well, so it's amazing work considering that. Well, it's amazing work even with formal training. William S. Parrott, the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange on underground history, as we talked to Peter Bogue at Washington State University, and of course, Chelsea Rose from Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Maybe you've seen the works of William S. Parrott and have a story to swap or a question to ask. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 on the phone. Send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Now, granted, I only had about a half-hour perusal of the works of William S. Parrott, Peter, but I think I only saw one human figure in all of the landscapes that are out there online.
That's true. Mostly, he is known for his landscapes, though early in his career, when he had a studio in Salem, Oregon, he did do portraiture and some commission work. But mostly, he is known for his landscapes, and it was early in his career in the 1870s when he came in contact for the first time with the landscapes of Southern Oregon and Northern California. And this is what really catapulted him to local prominence. Of all things, it was in the wake of the Modoc War that happened in 1872 and 1873 in Southern Oregon near what's today Klamath Falls and Tule Lake in Northern California. And this was a war that was carried in the press nationwide, and there was a lot of interest in it. And after the war, there were, in Oregon, there was a production of Panorama that traveled through the state that showed scenes of the Modoc War, and William Parrott was hired to paint some of those scenes. And then that was in 1873, and then 1874, he painted scenes for a theatrical production, a play that was written about the Modoc War, and he did 10 scenes of Southern Oregon and Northern California. So he started painting Southern Oregon scenes before he actually came in contact with them. But in the 1890s, he moved to Klamath, to Linkville, about 1891, and of all places, Linkville, which became Klamath Falls, he had a studio between 1891 and 1899, and he painted Crater Lake and Mount Shasta, and he became very famous. One of the critics who wrote about him at the turn of the 20th century said that he is responsible for putting Southern Oregon landscapes on the artistic roadmap.
And they are fairly breathtaking works, paintings of not just Crater Lake, but Mount Shasta, including Mount Shasta from Lake Siskiyou. So he made the most of his 8 years in the region. You mentioned that he'd painted some stuff before he actually saw these. Did he paint from photographs at other times?
Well, there were some photographs taken of the Modoc War. I don't have evidence yet that he used any images like this. I only know that he actually, this panorama that he was hired to paint for, LaVar's Panorama of Pacific Scenes, it opened in Southern Oregon. LaVar was an entrepreneur from the Southern Oregon coast, and he created this panorama where panoramas were a popular form of entertainment and ways of getting information to people through visuals. And there are different types of panoramas. This particular panorama was just large canvases placed in a circle for people to look at. And LaVar had hired someone to do paintings of the Modoc War, but it opened to rave reviews in Southern Oregon. It was a triumph in Eugene, celebrated in Corvallis and Dallas. Oregon. And then when it reached Salem, it was panned in the press. The editor of the Salem newspaper said that the tastes in Salem were far more sophisticated, and the specifically challenged the paintings of the Modoc War as nothing more than daubs of paint on a canvas. And so a few days later, LeVar approached Parrott to paint new scenes for him. And so Parrott may have used those paintings that already existed to base his new ones on. I don't know.
Huh. Interesting. Go ahead, Jelsey.
Oh, I was going to say, Peter Britt painted, or he first took photos of Crater Lake in 1874, which helped popularize the region as well. But one of the things, getting away from the specifics of the Modoc War, that I was thinking about is artists like Parrott and Britt and their contemporaries were really helping to shape the way that people viewed the West, both within it and from outside of it, and creating kind of this myth of the Wild West that, that still pervades today. And I think about some of those paintings and the moods in them with the dark colors and the, you know, the big giant mountains. And I was wondering if that comes out of some of his earlier work or if that's in some of those portraits, kind of those that vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. Very early on, he was compared in the local press very favorably with Albert Bierstadt, who was really the first great landscape painter of the American West. But, you know, as far as promotion of the West, it was actually a couple of his students who he met while he was living in Klamath Falls who became more important in the promotion of Crater Lake and other West Coast scenes. And that was an artist, her name was Grace Russell Fountain, and her younger sister, Mabel Russell, they were actually both from Ashland, grew up in Ashland. Grace, I think, was born in Yreka, but they grew up in Ashland. And the Fountains, she and her husband were living in Klamath Falls, and so that, I think, is where she first came in contact with William Parrott. She was an aspiring artist. She took lessons from him. Her sister Mabel visited from Ashland, she took lessons as well. And those two went on to paint pictures of canvases of Crater Lake. And in fact, Grace Russell Fountain's, one of her paintings of Crater Lake was used in 1902 in Washington, D.C., for congressmen to look at as they debated the merits of whether or not to set Crater Lake aside as a national park. And so it was artists like Parrott, Bierstadt, Thomas Moran was another big name, but also Grace Russell Fountain and her younger sister, Mabel Russell, students of Parrott, who helped promote Western landscapes and ultimately their preservation as, in some cases, as national parks.
Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange. Our focus is the painter William S. Parrott, two R's, two T's. If you're Googling Peter Bogue at Washington State, our guest, along with Chelsey Rose from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. The description of wilderness you were talking about, or the myth of the West, Chelsey, was along the lines of the fact that it was an uninhabited wonderland, which was not true, obviously.
Yeah, and I think one of the things when I've been studying Peter Britt, just to think about the way they're framing this, like it's something that's awe-inspiring and you want people to be attracted to it, but you also are kind of taming it in the way that you're presenting it, and just, you know, kind of creating some of this myth of this savage wilderness that still kind of we struggle to unpack a little bit today, because of course it was a settled landscape, you know, just in a different way than the new settlers envisioned it.
So, Peter, how realistic were the depictions? I mean, it seems like Parrott's works were pretty straight up. He didn't add details like that famous painting at the Portland Art Museum that shows an angle over Multnomah Falls of Mount Hood that is impossible.
Yeah, Bierstadt's painting of Mount Hood and Mount Jefferson from the Columbia River is impossible. That's an excellent point, and Chelsey raises a very good point, because early in Parrott's work, he did actually occasionally include images of indigenous people. And these later fell out of his paintings. And I think the best known landscape works of the Far West by Bierstadt and Thomas Moran are paintings that are absent of the indigenous people. And this is a great point. It's very important to realize this. This was part of the colonial expansion of America into the West. It was not only the Indian Wars, like the Modoc War, but it was also removing the indigenous people, not just from the real landscape, but from the imagined landscape as well. And Parrott did this, the Fountain, Russell, all these painters did this. Many of them included early on indigenous peoples, but those fell by the wayside by the turn of the 20th century. In addition, you know, he did, at times, Parrott did romanticize, and so he did paint pictures of places that don't actually exist together, but exist separately, but he juxtaposed those with each other.
So do we know how big a body of work ultimately he created, and are all the paintings accounted for?
No, absolutely not. Where the paintings of the Modoc War that were used in the panorama and then later in the scenery for the theatrical production, where those ended up, nobody knows. He was extraordinarily prolific. He painted a lot, and many of his paintings actually didn't sign. So we have no idea where they all are. There are a lot out there, however.
Is his style distinct enough that you could recognize? I know it said he didn't sign the ones he gave away so that they wouldn't, you know, get the same commercial value, but can you tell they're his?
Yeah, there are probably experts better than I who would be able to do this. You know, sometimes, like Grace Russell Fountain, in the 1890s, her style followed very much Parrott's. She was an excellent artist, and so some people have difficulty telling the difference between her work and his if hers are also not signed. Some would be able to do this. You know, I struggle at times.
All right, so somebody else could figure out the brush strokes and all that stuff and say, yeah, this is probably Parrott stuff. How is the, Peter, just a couple seconds left, how is the book coming along on Parrott?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to finish another book right now, but I've done quite a bit of research on Parrott, and that will be the next thing I turn to, hopefully full-time in a year from now as I finish the book I'm working on.
Okay. The other books that Peter has already published are called Environment and Experience, Settlement Culture in 19th Century Oregon, also Same-Sex Affairs, Constructing and Controlling Homosexuality in the Pacific Northwest, and Redressing America's Frontier Past. Those are the books of Peter Bogue, who's been our guest on Underground History, talking about the works of William S. Parrott. Peter, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're welcome. Thank you, and thank you, Chelsea.
Chelsea Rose at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, our partner on Underground History. Thanks so much for bringing Peter to us.
Oh, happy to do it.
Okay. Talk to you in a month.